You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and things are pretty interesting in the National League West so far. Of course, we've only had 15 or 16 games that have been played, but the Diamondbacks are hovering around 500, and they're very excited to be getting off to that start after an 8-22 to begin last year, so things are looking up for them a little bit. The Rockies started off very hot and have sunk back a little bit, having a couple of different issues sort of with pitching. Mainly the starting pitchers are not going deep enough. And then on the other side, we have the Padres, who are just having fun and winning games and hitting well and pitching well, and everything is going as planned. The Giants are not doing so well, and they are dealing with a lot of injuries and just a lot of inconsistency and just players that are not playing up to their potential at this point. And then there's the Dodgers, who, coming off of a 94-win season, everybody thought that everything needed to change, and I think maybe people were right because they changed a lot, and they changed the professionalism in the clubhouse, and certainly are reaping the benefits from acquisitions like Jimmy Rollins and Howie Kendrick. So things are rolling along for them. So as usual, the NL West is very interesting, and that should continue for the next several months. This week we have a treat. We're joined by Lyle Spencer, who is a wonderful columnist for MLB.com, who is based in Southern California and covers all kinds of things, including the Dodgers. So, Lyle, let's talk about, you know, it's nothing really surprising going on with the Dodgers right now. They just had a 7-game winning streak. They seem to be doing very well. They haven't had really that many struggles this season. Yet that seems to be what people talk about with a little bit of, I don't want to say surprise, but it is a 94-win team that everybody thought needed, you know, major improvements. So, I don't know. What do you think of the Dodgers so far and just how things are going for them?
Well, you know, it seems to me that the master plan they had is working. They wanted to sort of change the, for want of a better word, the whole culture there. And they brought in some, you know, some players who have a real sort of quiet and strong professionalism about them. Primarily Jimmy Rollins and Howard Kendrick in the middle of the infield. And I think both those guys have had a real positive influence on and off the field. I think that, you know, this is a team that has a lot of assets, you know, and they have talent was never at issue here. It was just a matter of putting it all together and getting this team, you know, sort of united in the way that great teams are internally, and you know, just being around the clubhouse, around, you know, the environment there, it seems to have, you know, worked, because there is a different sense, and I don't want to attribute that entirely to those two players, but I do think that they've had a very positive imprint on this team.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I was making notes for this conversation, I was trying to figure out, because like you said, we hear a lot of words thrown around, like changing the culture and inside the clubhouse, and so I wrote down more professional clubhouse ? And so that you seem to have confirmed that. So that really seems to be more of what it is. It seems to be less about, like last year it was just a large group of guys with all different kinds of egos, and everyone, of course, is making a ton of money, and it seems like there's a little bit more of a united front in what the actual task is, which is what
right.
This year.
Yeah, and that's so important in a sport where it's, you're together every day. You know, it's not like other sports where, you know, you sort of come and go, and you know, when you're on a
right.
baseball team, you're on it, and you know if there are guys who are unhappy and you know, you feel that, and there are, I don't want to say ego clashes, but just different types of personalities that aren't blending, you know, I think it's going to ultimately express itself on the field. And you know, I'm not saying that was the only reason some of these moves were made, but I do think that must have factored into it. And you know, and another guy who I didn't mention, who has clearly got a different attitude this year is Yasiel Puig, who's much more accommodating and seems to be more a part of the team rather than he always, to me, I always got a sense that he was just isolated from pretty much everybody else. And he seems much more a part of everything now. And I think that's also a big factor because he's one of your centerpieces and he's going to be for a long time. And you need that guy to feel like he's part of the team and involved with the team. And I get that sense now.
And it seemed like he was consciously deciding that he was going to be a little bit more of a normal person when it comes to just the day-to-day conduct. Is that sort of because, he was sort of been the last guy. He's drawing so much attention to himself, but it seems like maybe with this group, like, you know, you're the only one here who's still doing things that are sort of idiotic. And maybe he even got tired of his own act.
I think that's true. I think it's true. I think he finally realized that there's no fun in isolating yourself with your behavior, particularly, you know, as we were saying, with a team where you need to be part of it, you know, in order to function at, you know, peak efficiency. You need to feel like you're part of a team. And all the great leaders I've been around in sports have had the ability to unify. And, you know, I always think of guys like, well, Magic Johnson was like that. And Dusty Baker, as a player and as a manager, was like that. And I've been around a lot of guys, Joe Moore, a lot of guys who just had the ability to draw people together. And I see a lot of that in a guy like Jimmy Rollins. He's a strong personality, and he's committed to winning. And I think he had an immediate effect on Puig in terms of his professionalism, and I don't know if that was just by assimilation or the fact that I could sense that Puig, even though he's still fairly new to the culture, he knew who Rollins was and respected him, and I don't know how much that played into this new and improved Puig we're seeing, but I do think it had some role.
Now, the ball has been carrying out of Dodger Stadium at, depending on how you look at it, from a Dodger standpoint, a very nice rate, and if you're an opponent, a very alarming rate. But Dodger Stadium, not exactly known as a bandbox, but the offense has been carrying this team, and a lot of it's been the long balls at the ballpark. So what is going on out there?
Well, you know, it's hard to explain. I think a lot of the reasons why a lot of the parks on the West Coast have been tough on hitters traditionally is because of that thick marine layer that rolls in. And I haven't really been feeling that for some reason at the start of this season. And balls are carrying. You're used to get a lot of fly balls that would seem to just die and fall in the gloves. Now they're carrying out of the park, you know. It's interesting, you know, and surprising. I certainly didn't anticipate this, but it also could be that these guys are just locked in, and offense is infectious. I mean, when guys start to hit, we're seeing it, and we've seen it so far in the other direction with the Giants, who have struggled to generate offense. The Dodgers, there's just a confidence in there. There's a free flowing. It's almost like a fast break offense in the NBA where, you know, everything's just rocking and smooth and guys are confident. And Adrian Gonzalez particularly has been in another world. I mean, this guy is off to one of the greatest starts I've ever seen. And he's been a very underrated great hitter for quite some time, and he's put it together, and there's been nobody hotter than him. And I think a lot of what's been going on, you know, sort of is generated by what he's done. And when your big gun is hitting like that, I think everybody has a sense of well-being.
Yeah, when I was looking through the numbers, just a quick glance, the rotation really hasn't even gotten into a groove yet. I mean, besides Greinke, not everyone's been lighting the world on fire. So you're thinking if these guys get going the way that they probably can pitch, I mean, the sky's the limit for this team.
Yeah, and they haven't had Ryu. They're not sure when he's going to be back in the rotation. And Jansen, their closer, is on the road back. And so they haven't even, you know, their pitching is not where they thought it would be, and it eventually will be. Kershaw certainly hasn't had the start that everybody anticipated from him. McCarthy and Anderson. Anderson, you know, had a little bit of a rough night last night, but he had some bad luck, too, a lot of infield hits. It was just one of those nights, and things just didn't fall for him. But given that, you know, they're without the number three starter and their closer, their pitching's been actually, I would say, pretty decent.
Yeah. And so I want to end this on the franchise four. So the voting totals have, the first voting totals have been released by Major League Baseball. Franchise four, of course, is inviting fans to vote for the most impactful players in the history of the franchise. And so the Dodgers, you know, some of the other teams that I've talked to, it's, you know, the Diamondbacks haven't been around that long. The Padres are relatively young, you know, historically speaking. Dodgers, okay, so there are all kinds of names that could be on this thing. The top four right now, Sandy Koufax, Jackie Robinson, Duke Snider, Don Drysdale. So I guess that's a pretty good list.
Yeah, it's a really good list. And, you know, I kind of, I think that's pretty close to the way I would have voted as a longtime follower of the Dodgers going back to childhood. Those names are pretty hard not to like. I think the fans are exercising, you know, a lot of respect for the past, which, you know, I'm looking down some of the lists. You know, it's interesting that some names that you would expect to be up there aren't. I noticed one in particular, Walter Johnson, wasn't one of the top four. But, you know, it's a lot of it is fans are going to vote for who they're most familiar with, you know. And I think Dodger fans respect history, and their voting reflects that in those selections. They're going with, you know, people who've been out of the game for a long time. Roy Campanella is fifth on that list, and, you know, he might be a guy I'd want on there, but I'm not sure who I could take off. See, it's like that. There's so many great names through this franchise's history that I would say fans, Dodger fans, are doing a really good job of nailing it.
Yeah, it's nice to see that, I mean, just going from team to team, that there are, I was a little worried just because of the younger demographic of online voters that it was going to skew things a little bit historically, but I kind of like the mix so far of the fact that people are not just picking the current players and that they are really appreciating the history and that they know the history. I always wonder, like, our younger generations, do they even understand the history of the teams that they root for? And I am a little encouraged by what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also kind of difficult. We were having a discussion about the Angels, and can you take as great as Mike Trout is, and eventually he'll be the number one. You know, if he keeps going the way he is, he'll be the number one Angels player ever, surpassing Nolan Ryan. But the fact is, he's only played 3 years, and what I was asking myself is, it fair to vote for the guy who's played 3 years versus a guy like Garrett Anderson, who's been, you know, almost his entire career there and holds most of the franchise offensive records. So it's kind of, you know, it's a personal choice, you know, whether you're taking the greatest player or the guy who had the greatest career. It's kind of like the old argument about the most valuable player. Is it the player with the most value to his team, or is it the player who just did the most in that season?
Yeah, no, it's a great argument. I'm looking at the Yankees, Ruth, Garrett, Mansell, DiMaggio. So no Derek Jeter so far.
that's interesting, too. I was kind of concerned about that one because, for me, I don't see how you could not vote for those four. I mean,
right.
they're just all-time legendary greats. And as great as Jeter was, I couldn't put him ahead of those four.
No, absolutely not. I mean, no, there's no way, not at this point.
No,
or anything.
No. In fact, I would have Yogi Berra ahead of Jeter, and maybe even if I really looked into it, maybe somebody else. But right now, Yogi's the guy who, for me, would be hard to leave off, you know, given what he did over many years and what a winner he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bill, thank you, Lyle. I knew this would be an interesting conversation, and you did not let me down. So thank you so much.
Always a pleasure,
Alice.
Catch
up with you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I always enjoyed doing this, so thank you.
I'm here to talk my weekly chat with Corey Brock about those ho-hum San Diego Padres with their really good hitting and their really good pitching, and everything's going well, and everyone's having such a great time. So, Corey, I'll open the floor to you. What's going on with those Padres these days?
Yeah, Allison, it's so boring covering a good team. I've been so used to this for so many years. No, this is it's been fun to watch good baseball, and you know, obviously as a journalist, you know, win or lose, it really has no bearing on your job, but it's always fun to watch good baseball and watch good players. And I think any of us fans, journalists or whatever can agree on that. And you know, these new acquisitions, I think we were really curious to see how it would all play out. The spring training was a little bit of a tease, you know, you get to see these guys a little bit in this setting that's exhibition games with you know, conditions that aren't always great. You know, number 93 is pitching in the third inning of these games, and you're not quite sure how to judge what you're seeing. But now that we're into the regular season, halfway through the month of April, more than halfway through the month of April, you've seen that these real guys are producing real results and good results, and it's just been fun to watch. And like you said, yeah, the hitting has been good. One of the things I think I've noticed, Allison, is, you know, whereas this team had a lot of trouble scoring runs in the past, and I know it was kind of beating a dead horse a little bit with this, but, you know, worst offense in baseball last year. But, you know, they get in a hole and they just can't, incapable of getting themselves out of it just because they didn't really have the players with the skill set to help them, you know, work their way out of deficits, no matter how good the pitching was. Now what we're seeing is, you know, this team's down a few runs. So we had a game in Chicago the other day. They ended up losing, but they scored four runs in the ninth inning to tie it and force extra innings. And, you know, that wouldn't happen a year ago. And it wouldn't have happened in my previous 8 years covering the team. But, yeah, they're never really out of any games because of the hitting, because of the pitching, and because of the guys they have.
I recently saw a very interesting article on Will Myers, sort of when he came in with a chip on his shoulder, which I think everybody expected because he's received some criticism on sort of having a down year last year, sort of being this like really highly touted prospect not long ago. And some people feel like his stock has dropped a little bit. But he came to the Padres and he basically told Bud Black, like, I want you to want me to hit in the middle of the order. And Bud Black said, okay, whoa, you're not going to. And so let's not go there. And talked about hitting leadoff and really had to sell him on it. And so how did that dynamic go and how do you think that's going to play out over time?
Yeah, I think it was probably ultimately a pretty easy sell because, you know, one, it meant, you know, this guy's hitting at the top of the order. They don't have a true leadoff hitter on the roster. And well, let's face it, there's not a lot of prototypical leadoff hitters across the game of baseball. Not every team has one. There may be like five or six of them that really peg as true on-base percentage, steal bases, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think the Padres sold Myers on, hey, you're going to go hit first. We want you to be yourself. You don't have to worry about taking pitches. You don't have to worry about taking walks. You just go up there and you be you. You be aggressive. You attack early in the count if you see something you like. And, you know, if you're going to end up being a table setter, that's fine. But we're not going to ask you to change your skill set. And I think that probably resonated with him really well. I mean, also, you know, there's a component here where, you know, this is a guy who was wanted by the Padres. They gave up a lot to get him. So I think he feels like, you know, all these guys want to be wanted. I think all of us want to be wanted. But, you know, I think in this situation, really found the change of scenery to be refreshing. He's healthy. I think he's fitting at the top of the order. Now, later in his career, he's 24 years old, but, you know, he'll probably slide back and and fit somewhere in the middle of the order because there's a power component to his game. But for this team and for right now, he's the ideal guy to hit at the top of the order.
Now, let's talk about a little bit about Ian Kennedy. He seems to be nearing a return that seems to go by really quickly. He had some rehab outings, and Bud Black says he's ready. But then his replacement has also been doing very well, which is what happens when you have depth and when you have a good team. And so Desfonier, what's next for him? He had two, I think, pretty good outings. So how does that whole dynamic work out?
Yeah, this works out great, and I saw someone on Twitter sort of allude to, oh, we have a controversy here. Well, there's no controversy. This is Ian Kennedy's spot. You know, he lost it because of injury. He's healthy again, and I would expect him to be off the disabled to make a start here very soon. So, you know, they like him. They like him a lot. He injured himself in that first game of the year. But, Desfonier really stepped up and did a nice job and threw some nice games last year as well. And I think they feel really good about having him as part of that pitching staff, a guy that could, you know, fill in if need be, can be a long guy. He has a resilient arm. And I think the staff's better with him, with Ian Kennedy in the rotation and Desfonier in long relief. And that's really no knock on Desfonier. I just think that everything functions a lot better. You know how these games go, Allison. Sometimes, you know, your guy gets bombed. Or maybe let's say you get up by, you know, 14 runs in the fifth inning and maybe you have a chance to arrest a guy a little bit and you get your starter out of there. I just think that a guy that can give you length and quality of length out of the bullpen is such an important piece. The Padres had this the last few years with Tim Stauffer, and I think it's a really underrated and valuable role on a pitching staff. So I think that's where Desfonier slides back in to the spot that he fit in at the outset of the season.
And you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it's not like, you know, all the other starters are guaranteed to go through a full season and not have a setback or strain or whatever. Not that we're hoping any of that happens, but it certainly is nice to have someone like Fania who could just kind of slide right in case anything happens the next, literally 5.5 months. The season has just begun.
Yeah, let's not fool ourselves here. Yeah, this is, you know, you never finished with the same five you started with. And as it turns out, the Padres didn't even get out of that first week because Ian Kennedy landed on the DL and you already had to test your depth a little bit. So, yeah, I can envision a scenario for whatever reason where Desfonier gets more starts. And let's not forget about Josh Johnson. He's working his way back from the Tommy John kind of accelerated program because he's doing so well. I think this is a guy that could be making some minor league rehab starts in May and then potentially could be back in the big leagues in some capacity, probably in long relief sometime this summer. So, yeah, they've done a good job of building some depth so you're not flat-footed when a guy gets injured. Yeah, that's just a horrible spot to be in where you're scrambling around, you know, making phone calls. And I remember a couple of years ago they brought Jeff Soup on. They signed Kip Wells, who was out of wasn't even in the organization. And, it's just not a fun place to be in, and it weakens your team a lot. So I think the Padres feel like their depth is pretty good.
So I want to ask you about the defense because when I'm looking overall, and of course I'm just looking at a page on my computer, and I'm not watching this team play every single day, even though I am catching as many games as I can. But what do you think of the defense? The way I'm looking at it, if there's something that's not going great for them, it might be defensively right now. It's been kind of average, but what have you seen overall from the team?
Yeah, and that's fair, and especially it seems like when Andrew Cashner pitches, the guys behind him have struggled for whatever reason. A small sample size, of course, but, you know, I think a lot was made about, you know, the Padres were going to be inadequate defensively, especially in the outfield with Upton, Myers in center for the first time, and Kemp and Wright. But I tell you what, it's you know, when they've had hiccups, it's been with the infield defense, and, you know, the pitchers have had a couple errors too, I think, and so, yeah, it's if you had to nitpick a little bit and say, okay, here's something the team probably needs to be better at moving forward, yeah, definitely would be infield defense. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, they didn't have a group of and I mentioned this when, you know, a lot of people were criticizing their outfield defense a lot before the season. And certainly the guys you acquired come with an offensive pedigree. That doesn't mean they're going to be wonderful defenders, but, you know, I think Upton – and Kemp have made some very, very nice plays, you know, this early part of the season. Have looked athletic at times. You know, I don't know how it's going to play out throughout the course of the season, but those guys have been good. And Myers is getting better in center. and getting more and more adjusted to that. But, yeah, they're going to have to clean up some things in the infield. I guess if there was anything you needed to knock them down a peg on, I think it would be infield defense.
Well, let's end this on an update on the Franchise Four. Major League Baseball recently put out voting total so far for the Franchise Four. And as a reminder for our listeners out there, that Major League Baseball has invited fans to vote on the four most impactful players in the history of their franchises that they follow. And the Padres, so the top four vote-getters right now, pretty good. Tony Gwynn, Trevor Hoffman, Dave Winfield, Randy Jones. So I don't know. I don't think there's any controversy there. I think those are pretty much the four that they'll end up with.
Yeah, I could say we could probably book that and be safe about it. And like we said before, Allison, like, franchise really hasn't been around that long and hasn't had a whole lot of big-time superstars. But I think, boy, that's a pretty good representative group, those four guys. So I feel pretty good about that. And I think those were the ones that we kind of kicked around.
Yeah, I think so, you know, because we're brilliant and we should never doubt ourselves.
Yeah, mostly. Just send them a note that says we're brilliant and then we'll just move on to something else.
Exactly. Okay, Corey, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Allison, thank you.
Steve, I want to talk about the third base situation. Things have happened, I think, since the last time we talked. First of all, let's talk about Jake Lamb. That's a pretty big bummer that he went on the DL. What's wrong with him, and how does that affect things, considering that he was one of the better hitters coming out of spring training?
Yeah, absolutely, Allison. He has what they're calling a left foot stress reaction, which is something that is a precursor to a stress fracture. So it was a case for them in the sense that they caught it before it turned into a stress fracture that would have cost him, you know, several months. It looks like right now, if everything goes according to plan, it could end up costing him only a few weeks, which still, you know, the way he was swinging the bat is not something that they wanted to have happen, but certainly better than what the alternative was.
So what does he do? I guess he just has to not put any weight on it at all. Is that the rehab process here?
Yeah, they put him in a walking boot. So he's in a walking boot right now, and he will be for a couple weeks, and then they take that off, and he'll be able to start doing baseball activities again, and they hope that it won't take him very long to get back up to speed.
Has he had any kind of problems like this in the past?
No, he hasn't, but what was interesting is he talked about talked to us yesterday, and he said something about the way he runs tends to be very hard on the feet, and so he's going to work with the training staff about maybe changing the way he runs a little bit so he's not putting quite as much stress on his feet.
Okay, and that brings us to Yasmani Tomas, who got called up and should be seeing a little bit of action at third base. He's made his first start recently. Was really good at the plate and made an error. So what did you think of him when you were watching him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They thought during spring training that he could play third base. And then they thought, well, it'll be an easy transition to the outfield if he can't play third base. And then we got to the end of spring training and they told us that they hadn't given him enough time in the outfield, so they were going to send him down to AAA and he was going to play the outfield. His future was as an outfielder. And then they called him up recently, and he was pinch hitting and playing a little bit. He played an inning at first base. He played a couple innings in left field. And then Jake Lamb goes down, and he gets his first start at third base on Tuesday. So, you know, he at the plate, they think he's going to hit. They don't think that's going to be a problem for him. But, you know, they are a little concerned about his defense at third base, and they do see his long-term future in the outfield. But they just want to give him some major league at-bats right now, and the way it appears that they can do that is at third base right now.
He seems to be handling things pretty well. I mean, all I'm doing is sitting here and reading articles, and I'm not really, you know, obviously not there to talk to him directly. But he seems to have a pretty good head on his shoulders. What are your impressions of him just from kind of that standpoint, just a makeup standpoint?
You know, I'm really impressed just from the fact that, you know, you're talking about going to a completely new culture. There's a language barrier. And then you're thrust into a situation where, you know, there's a lot of attention put on you because of the amount of money that you're making. And he seems to just be going along with it without any issues, you know, whether they put him in the outfield or third base, whether he starts, whether he's coming off the bench. he just seems to kind of take it all in stride, and it doesn't seem to faze him. And it's actually been kind of impressive to see the way he's handled all the scrutiny.
So let's look at the team overall. I mean, I was looking at some individual performances, and there are a lot of guys that are performing very well. We'll get to that in a second. But just overall, I mean, you know, it's early in the season. They've only played 14 games, but they are a 500 team right now. So I'm looking at the standings, and, of course, this is being recorded a couple days earlier than it's going to be posted. But got the Dodgers, the Padres, the D-backs, the Rockies. D-backs and Rockies have identical records, and the San Francisco Giants are in the bottom right now. So, I don't know. I mean, that's got to be a little bit of a boost. Everybody wants to have that good start out of the gate, and then you sort of see how things are going to go over time. Certainly the Diamondbacks were a team that didn't want to just, you know, get lost in the shuffle in April. So what's the general attitude with everybody right now?
Well, I think they're thrilled with the start they're off to, especially considering the way last season went when, you know, they were 8-22 to start and essentially buried in the first month of the season. So the 500 start has certainly had a lot of positives for them. They feel like the rotation now, the last six times, last six games, the starters have pitched really well, so that's starting to come around. They've always felt good about the bullpen. They always felt good about the fact that the offense was going to be able to score runs. So not that there's, you know, they're talking about 100 wins here or anything like that, but there's certainly a lot of a reason for optimism, especially if the starters continue to pitch well.
8-22, I totally forgot it was that extreme. I knew that it was a rough start last year. I totally forgot it was that bad.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately can't forget it because I saw so many of those games. But, yeah, it was one of those things where no matter what they did, and they played, you know, 500 or above for a while after that, but it didn't really matter because they were so far, you know, so far buried as kind of the Brewers are finding, you know, now with their tough start. It's just so hard to dig out of those things.
Yeah, that is mind-boggling what's happening at the Brewers. Sometimes you just accidentally win games. I mean, that's just the way baseball works. And they're not accidentally doing anything. It's crazy. I mean, that's got to be rough because you're almost like, I mean, of course it's early and anything can happen, but you'd have to go on like some historic run to even just try to be in the mix anywhere at that point.
And that wears on a team. And that you could see how that kind of wore on the Diamondbacks last year where it was like, you know, they would win a bunch of series, you know, two out of three, and they look at their record and they're still well below 500, and it was like, you know, unless they pull off some kind of crazy winning streak, it just wasn't gonna change for them. I mean, it was a disaster start. I mean, they were 4-14 at one point, they were 5-18 at one point. It was bad.
Wow. Well, now let's talk on a lighter note about some of the better performances. Of course, Paul Goldschmidt, I mean, nobody should be remotely surprised what he's doing. Very impressive, though. 5 home runs and 15 RBIs in the first 14 games of the season. So he seems to just be settling in exactly where he's always been.
Yeah, you know, he's just Mr. Consistency with all that, just good at bat after good at bat. Certainly the left hand doesn't seem to be an issue anymore for him. Actually, he broke it last year. He's just picked right up where he left off, so he has been very consistent.
How about some other guys? Archie Bradley, Chase Anderson. Anybody stands out to you as somebody that's you know, really kind of going well right out of the gate and could, you know, steady things throughout the season?
Well, you look at Archie Bradley, and here's a guy that was talked a lot about as a top prospect, and then he struggled last year, and people kind of, I don't know if they necessarily wrote him off, but he wasn't talked about in the same terms, and he pitches really well during the spring. And even when the Diamondbacks general manager Dave Stewart was quoted in one of the local papers as saying he didn't think Archie Bradley was ready, it didn't deter him. And his next two starts, he pitched so well that they found a way to dump Trevor Cahill to make room for Archie Bradley. And his first two big league starts come against Clayton Kershaw and Madison Bumgarner in order. And he beats Kershaw with 6 shutout innings, and then he outpitches Bumgarner, but the bullpen gave it up for him in San Francisco. So I think for the Diamondbacks, they have to be really excited about Archie Bradley and the fact that if he is as good as they think he can be, he can certainly be a top of the rotation guy and certainly be a guy that leads that pitching staff.
And I want to end on a franchise four note. So the first results from the franchise four voting were released this week. And for those people who may not know what I'm talking about, the Major League Baseball is having fans vote on the four greatest impact players in the franchise's history. They're going to reveal those and introduce those at the All-Star game. So for the Diamondbacks, I'm pretty okay with this. If this is who ended up at the top, at the very end, I think I'd be all right with this. Randy Johnson, Luis Gonzalez, Curt Schilling, Paul Goldschmidt. You have a little bit of everything, and it's really, really pretty representative about the best of this organization.
Yeah, I think so too, Alison. I think the only debate there is whether or not you want to go with Schilling or Brandon Webb in terms of, Webb had more consistent years with the Diamondbacks, but Schilling had obviously the World Series, and so that probably trumps that in a lot of fans' mind. But yeah, I don't really have any problems with the voting. I know it's a lot of teams have much harder decisions than because they have, 100 years worth of history. But certainly seems like the fans are on the right track when it comes to the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Allison, always my pleasure.
Here for my weekly chat with my pal and fellow reporter, Thomas Harding, covers the Rockies for MLB.com. And Thomas, we're kind of settling in a little bit to the season and kind of a little bit of rough time for the Rockies. There's two storylines that are sort of interchangeable, or I guess intertwined, I should say, and that's that Jorge De La Rosa had a completely disastrous first start of the season, and the starting pitching rotation as it is not going deep enough in the game. So while we're not at a point where I think that the bullpen is going to, be in trouble, if this trend doesn't kind of alter itself, then that could be bad. So I'll just open the floor to you. Why don't you give me your perspective on this whole thing?
All right. Well, yeah, Jorge De La Rosa made his debut Monday, and it was a complete mess against the San Diego Padres at Coors Field. When I look at De La Rosa, he had this issue last year. It seemed like April was a complete mess for him. Then he turned out to have a very good year for them. So I'm not going to panic about that one. The way that the starting rotation is working right now, they're going to have to get deeper into games. I mean, Kyle Kendrick went 7 innings on opening day, and nobody's gone that far since. And they really need to get to the point where they're getting that far consistently. Now, when you look at the people who are in their rotation, then you have good reason for it. Eddie Butler is a rookie. Tyler Matzek, he came up during last season, and you're seeing some of the youth there. So the question will be, how much will they progress as this season continues? And that's the big question for them. This is why when you go into a season with a couple of guys like that, you cannot predict. You cannot give them a very lofty prediction, no matter who's in their lineup, no matter who's playing defense behind them. Until those guys learn, and they just have to do it at the big league level, they figure out ways to get some strikeouts, to get some early contact early in the game, then your bullpen is going to be taxed. And right now it hasn't reached that point of them being taxed. I did talk to Steve Foster about this recently. Steve is the first-year pitching coach for the Rockies. He understands what's going on with them, and each pitcher has his own things that he's working with. What Foster is trying to do is say, hey, at the beginning of the season, they've won 7 of their first 12, so it hasn't killed the team at this point. So let's build on the positives here. And that's what's going to have to happen with this pitching staff is some of the guys that are pitching 5 1/3, 6 innings, they're going to have to figure out a way to throw a few fewer pitches early in the game and get into the 6 2/3, 7-inning, 8-inning type starts that a successful team has to have.
Okay, so I have to be sort of the pessimist here because, I mean, part of the success of a season or part of just being able to have longevity and endure a 6-month season is having depth, having other options, being able to do some things. I mean, they've really kind of let themselves they kind of made themselves vulnerable with this problem when they released Julius Chacin and sort of did hand it over to really young guys. And, I mean, could that come back to bite them a little bit? I mean, don't you need to create depth, especially when you're the Rockies playing in Denver?
Yes, you do need to create depth, and that was something when it happened. When they released Jolie Chacin, I remember asking Walt Weiss about it. Could you be wrong here? Now, of course, the question is, and Jolie has signed, I think, with the Cleveland Indians and is working his way back, is that shoulder okay enough, or was he going to run into the same problems and possibly worse without the break? We'll just have to see on that. They do have some guys in the minor leagues right now, but It's the, what, third week of the season. The fact of the matter is some of these young guys are going to have to settle in. And if the Rockies are going to have a future, then the Eddie Butlers and Tyler Matzek will have to be a big part of it. Losing Jorge De La Rosa for the first couple of weeks did hurt a bit. They had a start from Christian Bergman, who was working out of the bullpen, really. He had thrown one inning all year. He shuts out the Giants, but it's only for four innings, 85 pitches, because he really hadn't pitched in a while. So they're going to have to settle into the season, and that's something we're just going to have to watch over time. I mean, when they released Chacin, they knew going into it that there was a good chance Chacin would find his groove, find another team, and they end up looking bad with it. But they decided to go with what they have. They do have guys in the minor leagues that are getting close. They may not be there yet. We'll just have to see what happens.
Okay, well, let's move on to little aches and pains. It's a little injury update here with Nolan Arenado is having some soreness in his wrist. Dickerson, he's having a foot problem. Can you give us an update on what's going on with those guys?
Yeah, that was just happened in that home game against the Padres on Monday night. Arenado, the wrist issue. Both of those we're just going to have to see day by day. The plantar fasciitis for Corey Dickerson, though, that is something that could be ominous, because that's one of those injuries where if it's your left foot and you're a left-handed hitter, it is very hard to plant and push off of it, as we found out with Carlos Gonzalez with his knee, as we found out with guys in the past. I remember Ryan Spielberg's playing for the Rockies. His numbers went down dramatically when he was trying to play through plantar fasciitis, and that was pretty much the end of his career. It's like things didn't work out after that. He ended up going to Japan, and now he's broadcasting. But so that's something that I think the Rockies are going to have to be careful with. If he wants to push his way through it, are they going to have to make a strong decision and say, no, you get this right before we put you back out on the field? So that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
And let's just end this with sending some good positive thoughts to John Axford and his family. I have not asked you about this, but this is really scary stuff. I keep seeing it written about. Axford, his son, was bitten by a rattlesnake at spring training, and he's been away from the team and is going to continue to be away from the team as this has become extremely complicated. What's going on with that?
Well, it's been complicated from the beginning. He had a nice rental property in Arizona, but as is the case there's also wildlife that likes living in Arizona. So there was a rattlesnake, I think, in a bush right close to his house, and the development had done everything to keep them out, but this snake found its way in, and they believe that the 2.5-year-old son, Jameson, may have stepped on the snake, because the snake shot an extreme amount of venom into him. And that's been the issue. A lot of times with these rattlesnake bites, they give you the anti-venom, and within a short period of time, things get a whole lot better. But because there was so much venom in this young man, there's been a lot of tissue damage and everything else. What's happened is Jameson has moved from the ICU, so that's a good thing. He's out of the ICU. They've moved him from Scottsdale to Denver, where they'll continue with the surgeries, because they've just got to work on all that skin tissue that the venom basically killed, and getting rid of that and rehabbing him and doing the plastic surgeries or whatever that it takes to get him well. The last reports, even though Axford is missing more time than maybe people expected, the last reports have been pretty good in that being out of the ICU, and so far they've been able to do things to keep that foot going. We'll just have to see what happens after that. I mean, we're all pulling for the young man. It's tough, and I just can't imagine being 2.5 years old and not being able to run around and drive everybody crazy like you're supposed to do at that age. So Axford is taking his time, but he is doing some throwing also. He can come off the restricted list at any point. So if things continue to get better, then I would expect to see the Rockies maybe activate him. I don't know if he'll need much rehab time because he's continued to throw, and maybe he can join that bullpen and certainly give them a help.
Okay, well, we'll just keep our fingers crossed for that family. Thomas, thank you very much. Talk to you soon. And Chris, my goodness, I remember us talking toward the end of spring training that Bruce Bochy was actually getting a little peeved with his team for
not performing very well, even though there were spring training games. He felt that maybe the team wasn't ready to start the season. Season starts, and it's been a rough one. So very long losing streak to close the season. How worried is everybody at this point? It's still very early.
Outwardly, not very worried. They got through a lot of the hoopla on this homestand, which still has two games remaining. They got through a lot of the hoopla celebrating the 2014 World Series, triumph. And so I think, even though nobody said that was a distraction, I think it couldn't help but be a distraction. And everybody's glad, I believe, now that that's over with, and so they can get back to focusing on the task at hand, which is, trying to make something out of this 2015 season, which,
exactly,
of course, they have not done so far.
Now, there have been some bright spots recently, so this isn't going to be all doom and gloom. So Tim Lincecum, not only does he have a fantastic new haircut, which I was pleased to see that was the biggest news story coming out of the Giants camp for like an entire day, which is really funny. But I guess when you're Tim Lincecum and you've had this crazy hairdos, this is what happens. But then he also had an extremely good start and a win over the Dodgers recently. So what was working for him during that start?
We've been talking about this for a couple of years now, and with him, it's an ongoing thing. He has to essentially relearn how to pitch, or learn how to pitch. I mean, he was kind of a thrower, and just a quote-unquote thrower when he won his Cy Young Awards, and he doesn't have that 95-mile-an-hour velocity anymore. He pitched his fastball, barely hits 90, a lot of times not even that, so he has to spot it. He has to mix his pitches. He has to develop command of his off-speed pitches and make sure they move. They've got movement. And that was the case last night. He pitched great against the Dodgers.
And another good performer offensively, Justin Maxwell. So he was one of the last people to make the team out of spring training. And I realize that the depth chart in the outfield isn't as strong with Hunter Pence, but he's really making the most of his time. So how much of a lift has he been to this team as a right-handed bat?
A big lift. And, again, it's isolated instances. But, for example, in that game against the Dodgers, he hit a triple and a homer. And in AT&T Park, that's about as good as it gets for any hitter. he hasn't had a whole lot of chances to play, but he's made the most of them when he has gotten in. And he's making his bid for more time.
Now, Hunter Pence, I was reading that I didn't realize that May 1st was even a possibility as a target date, and I guess it really wasn't, judging from what Bruce Bochy has said lately. But, Hunter is still seems to be kind of far away. He has not resumed any kind of serious baseball-related activity, so he'd have to hit off a tee, taking crosstalk, batting practice. I mean, there's all kinds of things. There's a process to this whole thing, so even if he's healed, there's a test that he needs to go through and maybe even rehab. So, we were talking about maybe the first week of May, but do you think this is going to sort of dip into mid-May or even later?
Yeah, I'm thinking mid-May. I mean, I'm just thinking, this is just me guessing. I don't know the medical updates or whatever. I don't know I just know, all I know is what we're told, really. There's no way to figure out more. Between what Hunter tells us and the medical staff through Bruce Bochy. And, I think common sense dictates it's not going to be till maybe mid-May.
Okay. I'm sure that he's better. I mean, we were talking about this last week, but has he been around? I mean, he's around the team, right? He's kind of working out with them.
He is around, but for Hunter Pence, he's keeping a low profile. And that's the way he is. He's not playing, so he really doesn't want to talk a whole lot. He's not being unfriendly. He's, he still stalks around wearing that goofy haircut of his, and he's awfully pleasant, but I know he's dying to get back in there.
Yeah, I would imagine. So the rotation has taken a little bit of a hit to JTV on the disabled list with a back strain. But, when you start messing with the back, I mean, it's not as dire as if it was an arm situation for a pitcher, but still, back strains and back pain, I mean, that can really make or break, so to speak, a pitcher. So how worrisome is that for him?
Very, very. as you said, with your weird little pun there,
yeah.
It can, you know, it makes a, I mean, yeah, this is something the average Joe or Josephine can relate to. When your back hurts, you can't do a whole heck of a lot. And, you know, Jake Peavy's trying to go out there and, you know, get major league hitters out with a sore back. I don't stiff back, whatever. I don't think so. So he's going to have some, he may be worked, like Hunter Pence, he may be working on that, you know, over time to try and, you know, get back in there.
Well, I was reading through the news coming out of San Francisco. Did you hear about this city ordinance that may, that city supervisors are going to vote on, or they voted to unanimously to ban smokeless tobacco on playing fields throughout the city? Did you hear about this?
Yeah, a little bit.
So
I've been traveling around, so I didn't hear the whole thing.
Right, yeah, it just kind of came out very recently, and not to put you on the spot. So basically, they're just waiting, I guess, for the mayor to sort of push this through. And the Giants have been rumored to be supportive of this. So basically, they're going to ban smokeless tobacco, which means that the Giants are not going to be able to. I don't know if there's anybody that chews tobacco on the team anymore, but they could be punishment. I mean, I don't know how they would enforce this. You can't really kick a Giants player out of the Giants ballpark during a game if they catch him. But kind of interesting that this could kind of go into effect. And I know Major League Baseball has been trying to figure out a way to ban it. It's hard to, you know, when you're fighting with the players' union on every little thing, it's kind of hard to do that. But that would be pretty interesting if this would be unprecedented if this act actually went through.
Only in San Francisco could they have this kind of showdown. It's, you know, it's
right.
A progressive city, as everybody knows. But ball players are ball players. But a lot of people who make these laws happen to be Giants fans or profess to be Giants fans. So you're right. I can't wait for the ultimate showdown.
Yeah. And then we're going to end. I'm giving a little update because the Major League Baseball put out the voting tally so far for the franchise four. So they released the first numbers. And so the top four for the Giants, really can't argue with this. And I think we kind of sensed that this is the way it was going to go. Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Barry Bonds, Buster Posey. So that's not too bad of a sampling there. I mean, if that was the way it would end, I guess that would probably be satisfactory to most people, I would think.
I wasn't sure how Willie McCovey would do, but he is, as I mentioned before, he is such a popular player, such a popular figure. You know, Mays and Barry Bonds, of course, we had no doubt how they were going to end up. And I thought, as we talked about last time, Allison, you know, I thought Buster Posey would do well, maybe not this well, but I thought he would do well because he is current. He's you know, in front of a lot of people, you know, every night right right now. Excuse me. What's going to be interesting is how the greatest living player voting goes. Willie Mays is one of the top four in the voting right now, along with Hank Aaron, Tom Seaver, and Sandy Koufax. I don't see either Seaver or Koufax winning, so it's going to come down to Mays and Aaron. And you know, they've always been kind of, you know, I don't know if you'd say friendly rivals. Certainly not unfriendly rivals. Mm-hmm. But you know, they get compared to each other a lot, and here they are again. So it's gonna be interesting to see how it comes down.
It's gonna be pretty awesome just to see them all together, as many people as they can get to get to the All-Star game, which would be pretty awesome when you see all the living legends in one place at one time. You really can't beat it.
Yeah. What's that? I got interrupted there for a second.
Oh, just that all the living legends. I mean, just to have them all in one place at the All-Star game.
Oh, it's going to be so impressive. And it's just, and what they're, you know, is we both know Cincinnati area, Allison, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's the birthplace of professional baseball, and so it's going to be very fitting.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Chris, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.